6 o'clock hour here at 97.5 The Fanatic. I am D-Line. I'm Tyler Zuli on the other side of the glass. I hope you're enjoying your weekend thus far. Little Richard in the background, paying homage to the great rock and roll star who passed away at the age of 87. And we've been looking at the Eagles schedule and also the NBA and the possibilities of its return, as Adam Silver had a conference call, I'll call it, with its players, the NBA players, as a whole. They talked for about an hour yesterday and tossed around ideas of possibly being able to get back at some point, playing games. They talked about the two locations, if in fact they did destination. Orlando and Las Vegas have been the ones discussed because they could house and everyone. And then testing was also brought up. So it was certainly an interesting conversation. And mostly what we know that came out of that is because ESPN was able to get a copy or the actual recording of the call and, you know, said what was discussed. But it's interesting because there is a debate of no fans or fans and how people feel differently about that. Me personally, I don't expect everything to come back all at once. Very similar to the way we're seeing even what is reopening and how it's reopening. So I think that it's the same with sports. It's just not going to be, boom, we're all back doing this again the way we used to do it. I just don't see it that way. So to me, the no fans is what I've been expecting. And so I'm okay with that because I just don't know how else you would do it. And I think just to be able to see sporting events, if in fact it's safe for them to do that, and you can do the proper testing and you can take care of people properly, like they did with UFC, that's going to have their fights tonight, but did have somebody who was fighting who did test positive, and they had to send him home. But everybody else was negative. And that, you know, 300 people were involved there. So it is possible to do it and do it safely, but it is not right around the corner yet for any of the other leagues. Golf is coming middle of June, the Charles Schwab tournament, and we'll see what that looks like, right? Now, they have a very different sport than contact sports that we're talking about, but there's still people who are in the vicinity of one another. All right, let's go to the phone, 610-632-0975. Dan is with us in Omaha. Dan, how are you? Thank you for calling The Fanatic.
Well, thank you for taking my call, D.
Yes.
Well, before I, my main point was that I was an NBA, but if I may make two football points real quick.
Absolutely.
One, I learned from your show about Booger and Joe Tessitore.
Yeah, how about it?
It's kind of surprising, kind of not, because everybody roasted Booger, but I'll say this about Booger. When we drafted Jalen Hurts, they went through about five or six different football personalities who talked about how great of a draft pick it was. Then they get to Booger, and he was the only one that was like, you know, this is kind of a weird pick. So I thought I'd give him credit for being the, you know, he
the was voice of reason.
Which I guess we're not used to. And then the other thing is, I'm just a little surprised how people, now we have a tough schedule next year, I get that. But if the season goes through, I think we're an advantage over all the other NFC East teams just because we're not getting used to a new head coach.
A new head coach, yep. That's definitely a check mark only in their, meaning that check yes for the Eagles and no for the others. So,
yeah, and, you know, 14 of our 16 games, the other NFC East teams are playing the same teams, you know, but obviously, unfortunately for us, the two games we don't have in common are Green Bay and New Orleans. But anyway, I'm just a little surprised. I think 10-6 is a reasonable expectation. I've been kind of surprised how many people are expecting less.
Yeah. I don't know how you feel about this, Dan, but I think the expectations come from the one thing people can't control, and that is injury. Because they saw their team so banged up this past year,
right,
that they say, okay, well, you know, 2 years ago I thought they were going to win 13 games coming off the Super Bowl, and that didn't happen. And now here you are a couple years later and you say, you know what? I just got to imagine there's going to be injuries and significance somewhere. And that's why they account for less wins.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Because they don't want to get their heart broken again.
No, I was definitely coming into 2018. I actually thought they were going to be better than the year before.
Yeah, I remember all of us did.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
With regards to the NBA, I think, you know, the 15,000 test kits, and that is a lot.
I think it is.
But if we're talking, you know, we got 300 million people in this country, and if 15,000 is going to be that big of a problem, I mean, I don't think they'll do it. I take them at his word that they won't go forward. If, you know, testing is such a severe problem in the country, you know, that I can't see them wanting to take any amount of tests away.
Yes.
But, you know, it's, you know, even if the NBA or any league gets started back up, I mean, you know, there's no guarantee they'll even finish that season or that playoff because of just the potential for a domino effect from just one guy testing positive.
Right. Well, that's why the UFC thing is so interesting to me, because that guy and then two, they call him his corner man. I don't know if you're a UFC fan or not, but it was just the one fighter and his two corner men. So three people test positive out of 1,200 tests. They got, so they send him home to self-quarantine, and it's not like he won't be allowed back. I mean, after he, you know, is quarantined for his 14 days, then they'll allow him to come and be tested. But for only three out of 1,200, to me, it gives you hope that one, that it can be done in a safe way. But again, you know, as long as the testing is available to all people who need it before you're just doing it this way, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, if this postseason doesn't happen, and it might not for the NBA, I mean, you know, we'll never know the impact that will have on someone's legacy, either positively or negatively.
Oh, definitely LeBron's.
Well, that's the thing. Say if the Lakers won this year, LeBron's at four, putting him two ahead of Kawhi and KD.
Yep.
But if the Clippers won, well, then Kawhi is tied with LeBron, and you'd have to think his chances of surpassing LeBron are very good when it's all said and done. You know?
Sure, I didn't even think of the Kawhi part of the conversation. I just automatically go to LeBron, but yes, absolutely. And imagine this. So what if they do play the postseason? You know, say they, and let's just say they're, quote, doing it in the bubble, so whether that's Vegas or Disney World. By not having any fans, I said to Tyler, it really evens the playing. Your seeding doesn't have nearly the importance, because at the end of the day, it's going to be just about who has the best talent and execution and coaching.
Oh, absolutely. It totally is a complete
changes everything. Yep.
Yeah.
Changes everything.
Last thing I'll say is, thanks for letting me take up a lot of time. Last thing I'll say, I hope The Last Dance, I don't know if they'll do it again this weekend or in episodes 9 or 10, but I've always thought an underrated or underappreciated series was that Pacers-Bulls Eastern Conference Finals in 98. And I hope they spend a lot of time on that. That was a great 7-game series.
Yes.
There was really only one game that was a blowout. They were all close.
I got to tell you, I'm looking forward. That should be, I want to say that should be in this weekend, don't you think?
I would think so. You would think the finals would be, you know, 9 and 10.
I mean, that's in my mind. That's what it is. So I got to think that has to be touched on this week.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. You're right. I appreciate the phone call, Dan. You are in Omaha in Nebraska, right?
That's correct.
I've only been there once. Can I tell you what I went there for?
Sure.
Pat Burrell in the College World Series, because the Phillies were going to draft him, which they did. And I had to be there when they selected him so I could interview him.
That's awesome.
It's the only time I've ever been to Omaha.
Yeah, it's kind of the one. if we're famous for any sports, it's that.
College World Series. There you go. Yeah. All right, Dan, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, have a good one. Wow, the Kawhi LeBron part of that. Tyler, how about it? If Kawhi were to win, Now he has the same number as LeBron, and he also has the opportunity by his age and a good team
to win a couple more.
Correct. I mean, he then gets in the conversation in a heart, you know, quickly. That changes things.
Is he going to need more, in your opinion?
Than what he has?
No, in terms of if you're going to put him in that conversation, like LeBron's got all these individual accolades. He also has the, I've carried loser squads to championships. I don't think Kawhi has either of those.
Well, the only thing I'll say is what he did with Toronto. I mean, he put a whole country on his back.
But that was a good team.
It was a good team. But not going into that season, they wouldn't have said that.
No, but I think going into that season, you look at that Toronto team, they were better than some of the Cavs teams towards the end that LeBron took in.
Yeah, I think a lot of, though, is hindsight, because Siakam wasn't supposed to be what Siakam turned out to be that year. Gasol never showing any age. That's a heck of a pickup for them in that. Obviously, you know how I feel about Kyle Lowry, so I was expecting that. The Danny Green, you know, that's a heck of a pickup. And I'll tell you the other thing. The coaching. We would not have given Nick Nurse his due going into that year. But I hear what you're saying. LeBron, yeah, he had, well, that was a whole debate. Did LeBron have so much less than Jordan around him? You know, Jordan with his Bulls. I think everybody just goes immediately to the Pippen part of that. But if you're going to do that, Kyrie was not chopped liver when he was with the Cavs.
No. Come I think I lean more towards like the 2000, what was it, 7? Was it 2007 that they went?
Oh, you mean
when they played the Spurs? Yeah, his first one. Is that what it was? 2007, yeah. I think?
Yep.
They were bad.
Yeah. I'd have to go and look. I want to say, God, that would have been maybe a Delonte West might have been on that team. Without me calling, I'll look it up in a minute. Let's check in with Kevin in Maple Shade. Kevin, thanks for the patience. How are you? Thank you for calling the Fanatic.
Thanks. I was trying to get on earlier when you were talking about the sneakers. I was out doing some Mother's Day.
Oh,
things.
No problem.
I wanted to say Happy Mother's Day before we go any farther.
I appreciate that.
No problem. I guess I'm what you could call a big sneaker person.
Are you a collector? Because we were kind of going over that. All right, you're a collector.
As of right now, I probably have around 200 pairs.
Oh my goodness!
I've had more. I've gotten rid of a lot.
Wow! Do you go for like one brand? How do you determine what you buy?
Okay, so I grew up in the era, like the 90s, when, you know, the Jordans and, you know, that era of like Jordan, Nike, like it's different now, but back when like Scottie Pippen had his own shoe and Michael Jordan.
Yeah, a lot of people had their shoe, their own shoe.
We used to get I'm not sure, the East Bay catalog when I was a kid.
Okay.
We used to go through it and they would have pages and pages of, you know, Air Maxes and things like that. And we would, you know, circle them. And playing basketball growing up, I would ask my mom, hey, can I get these? Can I get these? And it was one pair. Like, we weren't getting every pair that came out. So now when I was able to, now, you know, being a little older, I go back and I have pretty much every Jordan that he wore. It's by number. So every year was a different number of his career. So you had, like a caller said earlier, the Jordan 1.
Yes.
The Air Jordan 1, the Air Jordan 2, all the way up to, I'd say probably like 14 is kind of where I stopped. That was the pair that he wore against Utah, I guess, when they call it the last shot, when he hit that shot over Byron Russell.
Yes.
And actually I would say probably the people were calling him probably like one of the most popular ones is the Air Jordan 11.
Well, you know, let me ask you a question. You'll be able to answer this, I think. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. When I looked up, because the whole conversation came because I read an article of how the Jordan shoe is spiking in sales. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most people would say it's because of The Last Dance. So mm-hmm. When I went and looked, for some reason, the Retro 7 is the most expensive. Everything else is kind of in the same ballpark, and the Retro 7 price tag on it is twice as much as any other one.
So the 7 would have been his second championship, against Portland.
Interesting.
And the funny thing is it's more of a style thing. I'm not even a Jordan fan.
Okay.
but the 7 would have been, I want to say I'm almost 100% that he wore that against Portland in the second championship.
Okay.
But the funny thing is the Jordan 11, which is pretty popular, it's patent leather. A lot of people wear it. I actually grew up wanting that shoe because of Allen Iverson. He wore them at Georgetown his junior year before he came out, and he was wearing it in the NCAA tournament. It was a white and black sneaker.
Oh, wow.
He was wearing it back before he signed with Reebok, and that was like, I saw him wearing it, and then he got drafted by the Sixers, and it was like, that's the one I wanted. It was, and a lot of people, it's called the Jordan 11 Concord.
Okay.
It's like a white and black patent leather, but yeah, sneakers are, I mean, you can go on and on about them.
First of all, I bought this book because it was, somebody showed it to me, and then I had to have a copy of it for myself, and I got it in hardback, that's called Sneakers. And it's fascinating to read some of the backstories of some of these sneakers and the whole culture around how they became popular in, you know, and a lot of it were in urban areas, you know. And this past year, because I teach in a college class, and I had a kid in my class who was a sneaker collector. And we watched one day in the class, because it was a marketing class, the movie Unbanned. Did you see it?
Yeah, I've seen it. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was great. Did you enjoy it? I thought it was. And their whole thing about the touching more on the what was going on in the world at that time, too, and not just the shoe itself, but I thought it was very informative, if you will.
Yeah. And to your point about it being like almost more of like a culture thing, too, a lot of times, like, the shoe isn't even, the Jordan line is, you know, considered a basketball shoe, but I would probably be more, I'm almost positive that it's more worn now as a casual shoe.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not really, like I tell people, sneakers is like the only thing where you would take something and pay double the price of something that was from the 80s versus something that's, or 90s versus, like, if you were going to buy a car, you're not going to pay double.
Right. I know exactly what you mean.
It doesn't make sense, but it makes sense because everybody's trying to go back and get like the retro style sneakers, whether it be Air Maxes or, you know, Iversons or Jordans. And it's more, less now, like what people are wearing now. Like, people aren't running out to get a Joel Embiid basketball sneaker when they can get a Jordan basketball sneaker.
Right. I got you. All right. I appreciate the phone call, Kevin. I'm glad you hopped on when you got back from your errands.
Thanks, Dina. Happy Mother's Day again.
I appreciate that, Kevin. Yeah. Thanks for calling the Fanatic. Man, I got to tell you, the Air Jordan 11 Concord is not cheap. It is a cool-looking shoe, though. Wow. I like that one a lot. Yeah, just by having this conversation, I might start to become. Oh, you know what? With the Air Jordan 11 Concord, it had number 45 on it. Didn't you wear 45 in baseball?
I don't know. I'd have to go back and look.
I know that 45 means something. I got to think of what that is. I thought he, maybe, I'm not sure. Well, that's a good looking sneaker, though. That's for sure. And it was interesting, two callers ago, talking about how Monday Night Football has let their announcers go. So I find an article that say there's two insider, like in-house candidates. That would be Steve Levy and Lewis Reddick. Oh, yeah, we know him. And I don't know this guy. Dan Orlovsky. I do know him, don't I? I think I do.
Former NFL quarterback. Yeah, he's an ESPN analyst now. Yeah, he's quite good.
Yeah, he is. So those are in-house candidates to replace Booger McFarlane, and who else did I say? Oh, Joe Tessitore. So that those are names in-house. And then I also see where they have a new producer, the weekly primetime game. So meaning the producer's also going to change. So they're changing it all around. How about it? This does remind us that originally they were going to try to get Tony Romo from away from CBS. They probably had him pegged for this job. Maybe all along they knew they were going to change it up anyhow, but they didn't get him because he got a monster deal to stay with CBS. I always find it, see, me personally, I do have to enjoy listening to the announcers. If not, I really get, I'll turn the audio off or something. But if I don't enjoy who's calling the game, it does impact my enjoyment of watching it. Are you that way, Tyler? Do you care if you don't like the announcers? Are you annoyed?
Well, I will tell you this. For all of the Eagles games, I'm here. So we have the sound off anyway, so I don't have any issue with it.
Right.
And I'm not usually a kind of beat up the play-by-play guy.
Right.
Especially if it's not a local guy. Doing national play-by-play, and I know that's your job and it's what you're paid to do, and you're supposed to do it well. Doing national play-by-play can't be easy.
No. Well, when you say not easy because when you do your local, you know your people, and it's the same people.
Correct.
So a national guy might not know something that when you're listening, he's not sharing, and maybe he should.
I think that there is a personal, anecdotal
touch.
Times a
yeah.
lot. Yeah, and that's kind of, it'll come out. You can tell when a guy or a girl's been calling play-by-play for a while for a team. Because
right.
they know the particular team.
Yeah, they do. Though I have to tell you, maybe it's just me with my basketball. Like I love listening to Hubie Brown because I think I still always learn something when I'm listening to him, or I see something that if he hadn't, analyzed it as such, I might have missed that. So there are some national people in those roles that I really enjoy. Listen, I know some people like can't stand the national broadcast. I think a lot of them are, in many cases, they're good. They're very good. Like, I like listening to Doris Burke. I think
Doris is fantastic.
Yeah, I love listening to her call a game. So, anyhow, I mean, I think we all have, our biases of what we like. Mine's different than the next guy's. I'm just seeing how Booger used to get crushed. But again, I think his first year putting him on that cart kind of set a tone. Even if he thought he was decent, that got in the way. And then I'm not sure he ever bounced back from that. 610-632-0975. I'm Dee Lineham, and I'm with you until 7 o'clock tonight.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
I know I said it earlier in the show how part of the pandemic is you read a lot of mailbags, people want to throw questions at you, and you also relive things that happened in the past. So this just crossed my Twitter account 14 minutes ago. Allen Iverson torts the Raptors with a legendary performance on this day in 2001. 54 points. He was 21 of 39 from the floor. He played all but 14 seconds. The rest of his team scored 43 points combined, and they won the game 97-92. Iverson was 3 of 5 from three, 9 of 9 at the line. And he had the 54 points. And they needed that game because they, I would not have known this, but I guess they lost game one. I guess I should have remembered that. Isn't it funny? Years go by and you forget. Anyhow, what a game. I do remember being there. He was just on fire. So that was May 9th, 2001. Yeah, like those kind of performances. And even as we had the one caller a short while ago talking about the Pacers against the Bulls in 1998, I'm assuming you can't. I don't think you can do that season without doing that series. But I actually was even amazed in some of the retro last week when I had forgotten Barkley and the Suns and how that had gone down when they played them in the finals, which is in the first three. Did you see last week's episode? No. Tyler, you're...
I'm still catching up.
Oh, all right. All right,
I have started it. I'm still catching up.
No, that's fine. But you will be amazed at like some of the great games and series. And even in this, when somebody points out that, you know, that series that Iverson and them had against the Raptors was, I mean, he and Vince Carter were going like mano a mano back and forth. And in the series, it was just, it was awesome. I mean, I think between the two of them, right, there were 4 50-point performances because Al had two and I think Vince had two. Yeah. It was like, all right, you did that, I'll one-up you. And one of them was his 54 points in game two. Let's check in with Ron in Marcus Hook. Ron, how are you? Thank you for calling the Fanatic.
How you doing, D? Hey, D, I want to talk about that sneaker that Michael Jordan supposedly won the slam dunk contest with.
Okay.
He actually didn't win that contest. Terrence Stansbury won that. If you remember, they said it came out as a tie. And then they said, no, Terrence actually won. And then like 20 minutes later, they say, no, Michael actually won.
Oh, that was one. That was the slam dunk in Chicago, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And, you know, Terrence from Temple University.
Right. I didn't realize that's how it went down. I just know that it was in Chicago, and nobody could imagine that anybody but Jordan would win it in that building.
Yeah, because I think Terrence did that. 360, he was one of the first ones to do that. If you go back on YouTube and check it out, you'll see.
I will, but wait a minute. So you say, what Jordan shoe would that have been?
I don't remember if it was...
Well, I can figure it out because...
I think it was the two.
Got you. I mean, I didn't even know that he had one for each of his years that he played. This is all an education for me.
Yeah, and another question I always had about the Eagles, they always had problems drafting wide receivers. So they get a coach from Vanderbilt instead of, you know, like Clemson or Alabama or LSU, someplace like that, which would have made a lot more sense, you know, guys who've actually seen wide receiver talent.
Meaning on their
Vanderbilt.
On their staff.
Yes.
I got you.
It would make more sense to get one of those guys. I mean, it's not like you have any kind of limit on how much you pay a coach or anything, but Vanderbilt, I don't understand that.
No, but also I would say your scouts are the one who are doing your work in terms of who you're going to pick, not your coaching. I mean, I'm not saying your coaching staff doesn't have a say in drafting as well, but that's what you have your scouts out there for.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to say is, if you're a wide receiver coach from Alabama.
No, I understand what you're saying, but I'm saying to you it shouldn't matter on your coaching staff because it's who's scouting that's helping you draft your guys.
You're right. Okay.
You know what I mean?
But just check out that Terrence Stansbury.
I will. I definitely will.
Thanks, D. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Ron. Thanks for calling the Fanatic. I would not have known that's who Jordan took it from, Terrence Stansbury. And I believe, no, because Jordan also was in the one, oh, I see what he's saying, because I think the final of that slam dunk, let me see, is him and Dominique. So Terrence must have been in one of the earlier rounds, but that's how you would advance. I see what he's saying. So I'd have to check out the whole slam dunk Michael Jordan. Remember, that was when everybody's still... Nowadays, though, I will say the last couple slam dunk contests have been pretty good, even though you don't get the kind of names that you did when Jordan and Dominique did that. Let's see. Jordan in the slam dunk. I mean, I can always picture the one where he's, so 88 would be where he takes off from the foul line, I believe. But I wouldn't know the order of who else was in it. I'll have to find that. But it is amazing how the Jordan sneaker has so many stories to it. Like if we're going, I never even thought about it. The shoes he wore when he hit the shot over Byron Russell. I mean, that's crazy. Though the originals, I get it, because the originals had a story of its own. Everybody wore white sneakers at that time in the NBA. And even though it wasn't mandated, that's what everybody did. And that started the whole thing because they made a sneaker, one that had his name to it. Nobody else had their own sneaker. And he made them in the color of his uniform, not being the solid white. And that's what started it. So I get that part of it. But then, like, when you hear the ones that he wore in this slam dunk and beat Terrence Stansbury out, and then the ones on that last shot, game six in Utah. Now I'll be looking for them in the Last Dance. I'll be saying, let me see those shoes. I could probably figure out what year, because the guy said he had, there's an actual Jordan 14, which is must have been what he wore when he was with the Wizards. Yeah, interesting. I got to tell you, though, the one that he said Iverson wore when he was at Georgetown, I had not seen that sneaker before. But that one, it is patent leather, and it is sharp, really sharp. So, and like I said, I'm not even a sneakerhead. I've just taken notice, one, because...
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Well, I was teaching a marketing class and the shoes have become popular again. Maybe they always have been, but from a marketing standpoint, it's brilliant because you're not paying to get this kind of attention to your sneaker line. And yet, here you go. It's like a slam dunk. No pun intended. 610-632-0975. Jerry is with us in Pottstown. Jerry, how are you?
Oh, good, Dee. Yourself?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you.
Well, that's good. You know, you mentioned Allen Iverson recently, and I got to thinking to myself, you hear, even after all these years of him being retired, you hear Allen Iverson all the time in this town. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, this guy was an elite star, was he not?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, could you put him close to being like a superstar or Hall of Fame at least or anything? Or
he is in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, okay. My question is, all the years he played for the 76ers, what do you think was wrong with the management of that team not to be able to get him enough help to take advantage of his talent?
Well, I mean, you can say that. Actually, I saw a thing on Bleacher Report. I think it was Bleacher Report. Well, it was on social media for sure. But you could say that about a lot of people who don't win a championship. And they'll point immediately to, did the organization put enough around them? So, like, for instance, a Charles Barkley doesn't have a ring. Did they give him enough talent in Phoenix or here in Philadelphia? You know, you can go to a lot of people like that. And Allen would be one of them. I will say that when Larry came here, Larry Brown, that he found a way to utilize him that, you know, others may never have done, and he may not have had the career that he had he not moved him to the two guard position and, you know, allowed him to excel by putting players around him that did allow Al to be Al.
Well, Well, good points. I guess the only reason it made me think of that is because I look at the criticism the Sixer team today has taken for not getting enough talent to put together a championship team. And yet you look at, they got like three star players on that team.
Well, you do. I think in this day and age, for sure, and even if you go back, I think most people say you need 2.5 stars, right, to get it done. And
yes.
Some might say you need more than that. The Warriors, obviously, in their run before KD, they still had Steph, Clay, Draymond. Then they added KD, you know, so they had plenty of stars. And I think that's part of why some of the conversation happens around LeBron, is because people don't think he was given enough at times in his career. Certainly by the time he got to Miami, you know, I'll take my chances with him, D Wade, and Chris Bosh. So,
I mean, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Did Allen Iverson ever play with a legit star on his roster?
Not really.
Exactly.
No, I know. I hear you. Yeah. Certainly not anybody of the same ilk that we're talking, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah, he didn't play with another Hall of Famer, I can tell you that. That's for sure.
Give him a Barkley and see what happens.
Yes. And that was, I mean, I will say they tried, but they, what happened is they went out and got stars that were on the downside by the time they brought them to him.
Correct.
You know, Big Dog on the downside.
Yeah.
Chris Webber was on the downside. You know, they weren't Tony Kukoc, but they weren't the guys that had these, you know, great careers at one point in their life, but not when they got to being with the Sixers.
Yeah, they were basement bargains at the time.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, it's always that feeling, Jerry, like, you think you're getting in just in the nick of time, right? But, you know, it's a little bit of a gamble. You want experience, and yet, you know, the body might not be there the same anymore. So
they want to see if they could get what they wanted without having to spend the money to do it.
Maybe. But, I mean, I think of, like, a Robert Horry. He kept moving around, and he kept getting them rings.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a gamble, but you got to know your talent.
Yeah, this is true. Yes.
Yeah. Jerry, I appreciate the phone call.
Okay. Thank you.
Have a great rest of your Saturday night. 610-632-0975. D-Line, I'm with you for one more segment here at the Fanatic, and then the great Joe Stazak will take over. You're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic. More time together here on this Saturday night. D-Line, I'm with you at 97.5 The Fanatic. Tyler Zuli as well. Tyler, I just want to clarify because I was confused for a moment. Terrence Stansberry was in three consecutive dunk contests, but not part of the classic in 88 that was Wilkins and Michael Jordan. Jordan had won it in 87. And that one was one that Terrence did participate. And in all three of his slam dunk contests, Terrence Stansberry finished third each time. So, because the iconic slam dunk that I think of Jordan is the one in 88 when he went against. Yes, exactly. That I was trying to see. Somebody just tweeted that picture. That picture is famous. I did not know the person who took that one, because I do know a lot of the photographers who would later then work for the NBA, but that one was not taken by my friend. Let's check in with Josh in Audubon. Josh, how are you? Thank you for calling the Fanatic.
Hey, Dave, how are you? Happy Mother's Day early.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So I was the one that told you I was playing Glenn Mills last week.
And yes, and I said it was tight.
It was. It was my first time out. I had I played pretty well, but you know, with what's going on, they allow us to go out in foursomes, but two people had to walk. So I was the walker. So the back nine, I kind of fell apart with my tires.
Oh yeah, because it is hilly up and down. All right, wait a minute. When they let you, two people had to walk, and one person in each of the other two carts.
Yeah, so there were two carts.
Two carts, but you're only allowed one person in it.
Okay, so the walkers were allowed to have their bags on the carts.
Oh, okay.
which was nice. But it was beautiful, you know, walking around. I didn't mind walking as long as I didn't have my bag on me.
Yes.
But I always
and did
loved
you,
it.
Wait, before you go on, did you enjoy the actual course?
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, it's great. Yep. One of my dad's favorites.
Yeah, very challenging. You know, mm-hmm. Funk everywhere and stuff, but I was lucky enough to stay out of those. it was good. You know, first time playing there, because like I said, I'm a Jersey boy, but it was the first key time that we saw once they opened up the stuff, so we hopped right on it.
Wait, and, Josh, let me ask you a question. 10 is the par 3 down the hill?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Right, and then I think it's 11 where mm-hmm. the tee box, I mean, there's that... To your right is nothing but a hill straight up, and but you don't want to go too far left because there's water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's one of that tee shot is one of my tough ones.
Yeah, it is a tough one. I thought you were going to ask me about 10 because my buddy almost dunked it.
The whole cool.
Impressions I have to. Anyway, so to the Eagles schedule.
Yes.
Always love this part of the year. You know, everybody's doing wins, losses, check, check, check. You know, and at the end of the year, yeah, you may be right, but if it was like, you know, me last year, or, you know, 9-7, 9-7, yeah, but, you know, you didn't have them beating you had them beating the Lions and this, et cetera.
So, yeah, well, we brought that up because, like, you didn't have them losing to the Dolphins.
Right, so we were joking about it this year because, yeah, you may go 10-6, but, you know, you have losses versus you have wins against the Bengals and stuff, and watch, they're going to lose those games just like they did last year and win all the wonky.
Well, as I said, it's always when people go through it, they say, oh, but you got to get one of those, which is against, you know, two good teams, and you're saying you got to steal one of those, but they never think about that you might give one back to a lesser team, and especially when you're in your division. I think it's hard to run the table in your division.
Very difficult, and that's why it doesn't happen that often.
Yes.
But it's almost like a golf analogy, right? It doesn't matter how you get there. It's the result that matters.
True. Well, which is why we also brought up the fact, if in fact you play with no fans,
mm-hmm.
how would that, and I think you're going to see it in another sport before football rolls around, but it, let's just say the NBA plays their postseason in Disney World or Las Vegas. Where you're seated really doesn't matter because that home court advantage has gone completely out the window.
Right. But, however, I think in basketball it's a little bit different, and here's why. I think 5-on-5 basketball can be competitive in any state. And what I mean by that, like in an arena with 20,000 people or on the hardwood 5-on-5, like once the game's going,
yes.
I would just go at it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does.
You know what I mean? Like, I think...
But let's...
You
know, I guess my point was, if you are evenly matched in terms of your roster, and you have a Game 7, that Game 7 in Disney World is not going to equal them going up to Toronto for Game 7 when they are the home team.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
Yeah, so
especially like exactly, an elimination game, you know, the home team that's sleeping in their own bed.
Right, right. I mean, that all is going to be an even playing field if for this year, it seems.
Well, let's hope we have that situation.
That's true. Right. Then, cuz that would mean then we're watching something happen.
Right.
That's new.
I hear you. All right, Dave.
All right, Josh, thank you. And I'm glad you enjoyed Glenn Mills. That was fun. All right, take care. Thanks for calling the Fanatic. And he played well his first time out. Excellent. It's a very hilly course. Yes, you know, you go back and forth. Well, we did that. It was fun. And it allows for optimism. Well, first of all, the Eagles do have a good roster. And you have a very good quarterback. And you made some good additions. And then there's some unknowns still out there. So... Tyler went with the 500 team. I went a little higher. I went 10-6. And I would say we had a lot of people that were more right in the middle of us. Tyler, we had the one guy who thinks they're only going to win 6. That was the most.
That's the lowest I've heard.
And that seemed extreme. But I mean, I knew where he had an argument for him, meaning he made his own argument. But that was the lowest.
Yeah, over the course of the week, it's been a lot of 11 and 12. Today, we got a lot of
nine.
A lot of nines.
Yeah. Wow, you had 12 this week?
Oh, we got a 12, yeah.
Mm, interesting. All right, a 12 is out there. Tyler, you're back with me again tomorrow, right?
Yes.
Excellent. We'll do that at 12 to 4. We'll allow anybody who wants to, at the end of their call tomorrow, wish a mother a happy Mother's Day. That'd be excellent. I'll do the same for my own mother. I'll find out from my dad when she's going to be in the car so she can hear me wish her a happy Mother's Day. We thank you all for calling in and making it an enjoyable Saturday afternoon. We went through the Eagles schedule. We went through the pros and cons of what the NBA is currently discussing. We played some Little Richard. That was awesome. And yeah, we had some good conversation. Some people even told me about their golf outings. So that was fun as well. Joe Stazek is coming up next. He will keep you good company until 10 o'clock. And again, like I said, Tyler and I will be back again tomorrow. And tomorrow I have a couple guests that will be joining us. I might roll in some basketball talk. Oh, and we also had some really good conversation about the Jordan sneaker. And tomorrow we'll look a little ahead to episodes 7 and 8 of The Last Dance. It is the next to the last weekend of these episodes because there are 10 in all. So we'll take a sneak peek at what's in store for us tomorrow night, which marks episodes 7 and 8. It's been fun. Joe Stazek is up next, 610-632-0975. Ooh, I do have one thing I want to tell you about, and it's the virtual auto race. Yes, 97.5 The Fanatic and Nerd Street Gamers have teamed up with Dover International Speedway to bring you our first ever NASCAR Heat Tournament on PlayStation. If you think you are the fastest racer in the game, go to 97.5thefanatic.com and register for one of our 4 qualifying heats. The top 10 fastest drivers each heat will qualify for the championship race where you have a chance to win 4 tickets to the August 23rd Dry Dean 400 NASCAR Cup Series race and 4 hot pit passes. Experience NASCAR live in person, closer than you think, at Dover International Speedway. For tickets and information, visit doverspeedway.com. That's doverspeedway.com. Our first heat kicks off soon, so get to 97.5thefanatic.com and get all the details. I am Dee Lynam. Until tomorrow at noon, have a great night.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.